Okay, right, we're on.
Here we are. We're back.
So we missed our last, I just checked right now, our last podcast was recorded in July. And that one might not be.
I haven't posted it, but I will post it soon. I may even post it before this one, so it may be up before this one. But we're back recording after almost a six month period. Wait, what's my math?
We missed 3 full months. So we missed all of August, all of September, and all of October.
Yeah. But you know, we're busy.
Roughly 4 months.
Busy with, you know, like different things in our lives, buying a house, getting a different job.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff. So we don't have a lot of battery or time necessarily for this podcast. So maybe we won't update on our personal lives. But
get right to it.
We'll get right to it. The election happened.
President Trump.
President-elect.
President-elect Trump.
And obviously there's a lot of emotional – there's a lot of response and there's a lot of emotional response to it. And I, you know, have a lot of scattered thought and feeling and emotion and reaction to both what's spurred or spawned all this, as well as the, the reactions of people around us.
Yeah, we could have talked a little bit about what the church teaches in terms of how to vote and all that, and maybe we can do that in 2 years for the midterm elections.
We dropped the ball for the last one.
Sorry,
we dropped
it. You know, let you down.
Yeah, but don't forget. I mean, you know, the local elections are equally important in my mind, because the other thing that I hope we remember is we didn't elect a king. There are other people in the government that can serve. Whether people can debate about how effective it is or this and that, you know, the system is supposed to be set up where there's checks and balances, and so the election of representatives and congressmen and senators, and also voting on amendments and bills and, you know, referendums, all those things, in my opinion, are also important. And those things happen, not just the opportunity for those to be voted on, don't just happen every 4 years when the president is up for election.
That's right. And although some people are already looking to 2020, I think the vast majority of the country is still trying to process what just happened. And as you mentioned, there are all kinds of different emotional responses, ranging from jubilant.
Gloating.
To devastation. You know, some people feel devastated by this. So just in terms of that.
So as a Catholic, obviously there's different identities in each of us that can respond in different ways. Certainly, as an example, like as a man, purely as a man in a masculine identity, at least for myself, I'm not going to speak for all men, but certainly for myself, there is a sense of guilt or responsibility that, like, oh well, we have maybe not allowed or not supported enough the opportunity or the privilege for the first woman president. You know, so certainly, like, for myself, one identity of myself as a man is that. Another one might be like as a.
And just to clarify, that's not an endorsement of Hillary Clinton.
No. Right? Yeah. It's just like, you know, so my one response from part of my identity might be like, another part might be like, since we live in Maryland, and Maryland was almost certainly, well, from my perspective, was going to be Democratic, and the electoral votes were going to be Democratic, there is a side of me that's like, oh, well, I mean, however I voted, it wasn't going to go against Clinton anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely parts of my identity, I think, where I can respond in different ways. But I think one thing is that I haven't maybe – even you and I, we've had a lot of discussions since then. But something I haven't talked about too much is as a Catholic, in a Catholic identity, how – I guess I'm not sure – or I haven't been able to articulate or pinpoint my position or how I'm feeling or thinking about all this.
Yeah, well, there's something that that you had mentioned in a conversation that we had earlier in the week that, sort of no matter who you were supporting in the election, the results are that people feel divided and that there's a great deal of anger. And I think perhaps the election itself expressed a lot of that anger in the votes. And you express something like, yeah, there's a kind of ugliness that's come through from many different sides, from many different parties, from many different parts of the electorate on both sides of the aisle. And that for you, we shouldn't be surprised. We shouldn't be surprised that there are ugly sides to human nature being shown in this election.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one of the things I was, certainly there was some emotional, there's been an emotional response to this and also an emotional response for me about Donald Trump being elected, but also my emotional response to other people's emotional response.
Yeah.
Because certainly I recognize and acknowledge that this is a devastating thing. But some of the things that have been articulated, for example, you know, that like that the bully won, that the sexist, rapist, xenophobic bully won. That may absolutely be true, but for certain, this is not the first time in the history of our species, of humanity, where there has been, someone that people may see as evil or whatever it is, who has like won the game or gotten the position or had the opportunity or won the election.
Yeah, right. I mean, and that's being expressed. And to be fair, I think when we look at people who are now expressing anger in the opposite direction and are, you know, shattering car windows and are shouting down people and are burning American flags and stopping traffic in protest of the election results, that also expresses something, I think, that's not entirely just and peaceful and Christ-like. I think, again, what we're seeing is an ugliness that's being shown from not just one side, not just from another. And I guess for me, I see the whole thing prior to the election, you know, all the sentiments and feelings and discussions prior to the election, and then all the emotions and all the ways people are thinking about things after the election, I see it as a giant exercise in empathy, because it becomes so easy in a debate or in the aftermath of an election to express frustration at the other, right? To say that, oh, those other people destroyed it for us. It's all these other people's fault. And, you know, once we make America to what it truly is or what it really should be, then those other people are going to shut up and realize that it's time to move on. And what anytime either side does that, what they're realizing is that there is no other America, right? And I think very few people could say, hey, some of us feel that Donald Trump is going to be the best candidate, and yet some of us feel that Hillary Clinton is going to be the best candidate. The way that it's always phrased is, they think that and we think this. It's always us versus them.
Yeah.
And so for me, the first and primary Catholic response is to see America as one country and to see people, even with their divisions, even with the ugliness that comes out, right? Even if there are people who are expressing racist sentiment, which certainly not all and certainly maybe not most Trump supporters are expressing, but even if they are, the point is they are still us.
I think that's a good point. And, you know, kind of going back to, you know, I relate a lot of things to martial arts, and one of Sifu Bruce's primary influences was this philosopher named Krishnamurti. And a lot of sort of like the main takeaway that Sifu Bruce got from it was that what exists in the world also exists in you, and what exists in you also exists in the world. So while I don't agree or buy into it completely, there is a sense of if you want to discover and learn about the world, you really all you need to do is look within yourself, you know, which I think that theme you'll find in like, you know, Hallmark cards and, you know, like sappy, you know, like fantastic movies and stuff like that. But I think it's also true that people will easily say, like, oh man, our country is so racist, for example, our country's so racist, or our country's so intolerant. But people are very hesitant to be like, well, I am also racist and I am also intolerant. Because I think there's a hesitancy or a maturity for people to be like, I don't think that I am, but possibly I am, or even if I can't see it or agree with it or think that I am, you know what? I'm sure that I am too.
Yeah, in some way, shape, or form.
And I think, I mean, it's easy for me to be like, oh yeah, I do that and I'm so great, you know, but like, and I don't necessarily think I do that. I do think that I exhibit all of the isms and phobias. But I think as a society, especially when things are vulnerable and emotional in this kind of way, it's super scary to consider the fact that not just that the country or all these ignorant people voted for Trump, or not, I mean, there's plenty of people that did vote for Trump and are happy that Trump was elected. Yeah. But you know, for instance, people that did not vote for Trump, it can be easier to say like all those people who I disagree with and I detest and all these other things voted for Trump, and it can be even more terrifying to be like, well, we voted for Trump.
Right. Right. Yeah. Regardless of whether I did, we did. You know, and so even I, you know, even if people say, well, wait a second, Hillary won the popular vote and this and that, well, regardless of it, well, then, you know, whether you're a Trump supporter or a Clinton supporter, the point is there are people who are expressing deep frustration and deep pain on both sides. And so if you are a Trump supporter, I think the question for you might be, why is it that people are so upset with this? And even as they might express that in unfair ways, even if what they say may seem to not capture what you perceived, there, I mean, I think any kind of respect for a person's goodwill will say, well, perhaps there's a legitimate reason for part of their pain, and how can I try to seek to understand that? And for Clinton supporters, I think the exercise is just the same, which is clearly there were people who had deep pain and frustration over the last 4 years or last 8 years that they expressed in their vote. And so as much as a Clinton supporter might feel that the Trump campaign had these elements of sexism or racism, the exercise again for the Clinton supporter is to say, well, what is it about, you know, a good American person that voted for Trump, what is it about their pain or their suffering that I'm not understanding? And with the full faith that there's something common in humanity between supporters of both camps that can be uncovered and discussed, and can be a basis for further collaboration and compromise and, you know, progress.
That's true. And I think one of, you know, kind of going back to very Christian or Catholic messages and themes is, you know, for instance, and people still are like this, you know, where they'll be like, well, the Jews killed Jesus. But I think one of the lessons that comes out of the whole passion story and, you know, one of the main lessons about compassion and the whole story of Jesus in the Bible is that, no, we killed Jesus.
Yeah, all of humanity.
Like all of us did. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, and people will say it all the time. Like, well, I'm not going to give money to these poor guys on the street. Or, no, they're not even going to say that. I'm not going to give money to these beggars on the street because they're just going to use it to buy, like, booze and drugs or whatever it is. And they'll have sometimes very legitimate, logical things that they may say as to why they don't want to talk to them or touch them or help them or give them money or anything like that. But I think my belief and my understanding is that a Christian response, at least in part, should be, well, what matters is this person isn't suffering and this person is in need. For whatever reason, why they got there, and I may feel like they deserve to be there, they did it to themselves or whatever, but the truth is they are in suffering. And so how do we respond to that? And I think right now with, you know, I told Bri that I didn't really want to go too much into the actual, like, politics and positions of the candidates and stuff like that, because some of it is that regardless of, you know, our political views or actions or inactions, you know, is I think where you and I and a lot of other people can probably come together is that regardless of who caused it, what the reason is, what people's positions or temperaments are, there's a lot of people who seem to be suffering and are in a lot of pain. And so as Catholics, how do we respond to that? How can we do it with an open heart that's, even if we have some thoughts or opinions, that where our judgmental side doesn't compete with our ability to be empathetic?
Right. And I think that reminds me also of looking at that bigger picture, right? Because it's interesting when I teach about the First Commandment, the textbook that the school uses talks about two different offenses against the belief in God. And one is presumption, right? The idea that we're gonna be saved regardless of what we do. Like God is just automatically gonna save us, right? The other one is despair. The idea that no matter what happens, God can't save me, that life is hopeless, right? And I think those are sort of the twin sins that happen very often with politics. There's a presumption that humans on our own are going to be able to create this perfect and just world. And so what happens, I think, is when we perceive that that's not happening, there's just this deep frustration, you know, we should have been able to do it. Well, why would we presume that, right? There's no one that can make this world perfect except for God. And we're collaborating and trying to make it perfect. But the point of all of us trying to make it imperfect is because the imperfection will persist until God perfects it, right? So the flip side of that then is also that we shouldn't flip into despair, because as much as we are in this world of imperfection, this world of evil, this world of struggle, the faith and the hope part of it says that light shines through in spite of all that, and that we can bring that light forward in spite of all that. And I think those are just two things that we can sort of hold on to as we're moving forward.
But certainly this idea, and I know we're sort of veering off, but you know, like I watched at Matthew's reconciliation workshop this morning, they showed this like very moving kind of like short video. And like there were a few, there was like three videos that the director of religious formation showed. And the first two were, you know, just about like, God and, you know, the faith and joy, and we should return to God even when we sin. So it was just a session for the parents while the kids watched something about like, you know, whatever, younger grappling issues with that might need to be reconciled or confessed. But one thing that I really liked was, I will just shorten as much as I can for the sake of brevity, but basically it told the story, and I had never heard this, so maybe you have, but there's a story about how when Leonardo da Vinci was painting The Last Supper, in wherever Leonardo da Vinci was from, somewhere in Italy, I'm pretty sure Italy, you know, he, at some point he found like a face in the choir, like a choir boy, who he used to model the face of Jesus. And he painted him. It took him like 3 days. And he was like, you know, just meticulous about it, like studying this face that he thought like exuded like calmness and patience and all these things that he wanted to capture in the face of Jesus. And in the next few months, he was able to find faces to help model the rest of the disciples. Well, when he was looking for, he was looking for a face to paint for Judas. Have you heard the story?
Yes.
I have not. And so when he was looking for the face of Judas, you know, he couldn't, and he was, you know, scouring his village or whatever, hours a day for like what was days that turned to weeks, then months and then years. And literally for 11 years, he like couldn't find the someone until one day he saw this guy on the street and, you know, had the features that he was looking for. And he asked this person if he would come in and, you know, be like his model. I don't know if he told him it was for Judas. He just asked him to do it. So as he's painting this face, he's like studying this guy's face and, you know, and painting him. And at one point, the model just starts, apparently he just started weeping. And Leonardo da Vinci was like, you know, what is wrong? You know, was it something that I did? Is it something that I said? And this model was like, Master, don't you recognize me? And what Leonardo, I don't know if he told him or what Leonardo da Vinci realized is it was the same face that he had used for the face of Jesus. And so literally the same face of Jesus was the face that he had sought for and turned into the face of Judas, you know. And so the kind of the point of the video is that, yeah, we all have this side that's, we have two sides of the same coin. You know, it's the same, like, with the first commandment. There is the side of, like, presumption, and there's also the side of despair. But it comes from the same place, and I think part of what's hard about this is not just reconciling that there's people around us or next door to us or around us or our friends who may be revealed as people that we didn't realize, but possibly that there's parts of ourselves that aren't the people that we realized or thought that we were either.
Right. And I think the important part is just in this exercise of empathy, that if someone has expressed a racist thought or has expressed a sexist thought, or on the other side, if someone who, if you're someone who's pro-life and you know someone who, you know, actively promotes things that promote abortion or promote other things that are against the church teaching, that any one of those positions, any one of those beliefs, any one of those habits does not disqualify them from the love of God. And ideally, it shouldn't disqualify them from your love. As a Christian, if you believe that, if you hold true to Christian values. And so the exercise is to say, all right, well, you know, certain things that we don't like in other people are being expressed in this election, before the election, during the election, after the election. But that doesn't make us all any less individual Americans, or one as a human race.
And I think the other side too is, I mean, and you know, because this has come up in messages, you know, like private messages and stuff like that, and people's comments on whatever, Facebook, or, I mean, when I had my staff meeting at work, it was literally during the time when some of the election results were coming in, and something I said to my staff, and I, you know, I've had to reassure to myself, and I would like to say to whoever, any of our friends or family that might listen or, you know, whatever, is just that, you know, despite, you know, the circumstances of our political civic government, that we can still steel ourselves and steady our hand and remember that our own self-worth and our values and our beliefs and our morals should not, for certain, and cannot be defined by whoever the population votes for a political office. That, first of all, there is a power above Donald Trump. I hope that people fully recognize that Donald Trump or his election or the people that voted for him, although it may feel like people's value or worth is affected and, you know, how they're perceived, that by any means, and certainly not, you know, people that you don't agree with or that you don't, you know, have nothing in common with, should not define your self-worth and should not, it may challenge, but certainly shouldn't define your values. And so there are a lot of people who have talked about how it's difficult for them to speak with their kids about how to explain things, like how, you know, why these kinds of things happen. And I kind of feel like a lot of the messages, although they can be hard to hear or remember in times of trial, are universal. You know, that there are times when it may seem like the world is very much against you and not in your favor. And so how do you turn back to a power that is greater than that within ourselves, and in a belief and in a faith and in a, you know, like a faith community and history and legacy that has provided many, many peoples, at the same time, the same peoples, the resources and strength and ability to overcome certainly times of oppression from whoever it was. I feel like in some ways, not to diminish it at all, but you know, the same pain and suffering and isolation and fear that people may fear now, there is a shared lineage and link to, you know, the to many peoples through many times through our history who we can call in them now and ask for their assistance. You know, like in Sayoc, we have a saying, when you draw your blade, 10,000 blades draw their 10,000 hands draw their blades with you. You know, and so it's this idea that, like, every time you do something in these martial arts, it's not just you in this one time and place, in this one instance, but we draw upon the knowledge and experience and lives of so many people that have come before us that both give us strength and resolve. And I think we can do the same thing now, whether we're reading the Bible or talking to our peers or even our grandparents about things that maybe they have gone through.
I think that's well said. And I think that recalling that there's a power greater than all of these things means that, you know, our response moving forward isn't one of feeling superior, right? Feeling righteous in one way or another. I think acknowledging that there's a power over all of this that gives us that deep sense of identity demands that we move forward, quite frankly, with humility and with faith.
And also with strength, I feel like, you know, like we, that strength can be called upon. There's so much strength and heroism that has come from so many people before us, and we can draw on that again.
All right.
Okay.
That about wraps it up.
The end.
In part because we're running
out of... We solved it.
And it's because we're running out of battery.
We solved it.
We'll get back at this. And look forward to hearing from you all next time.
Bye-bye.